As we continue our study, we're beginning the 18th chapter of 1 Samuel. In the previous chapter, David had just made his very great victory over the giant Goliath. He now was coming into the public eye. He now was gaining great prominence because of this great feat. The Philistine army had been defeated. They had been run back to their home. Many of the Philistines had been destroyed, and a very great victory was had because of this great deed that David did in slaying the giant. And as we end the 17th chapter, we have Saul talking to David. Saul, again, making an acquaintance with David, apparently not remembering that David had been his harp player in an earlier time when he needed this music to soothe his troubled spirit. And so the last verse of chapter 7 says, "And Saul said to him, Whose son art thou, thou young man? And David answered, I am the son of thy servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite." So David answers in a very humble manner, although he has every reason to have a feeling of self-glorification due to this great act that he just done. So beginning with the first verse of chapter 18, "And it came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul." Here we have the development of a very interesting and significant situation. Jonathan, the son of Saul, becomes a very close friend of David. Jonathan loved him as his own soul. They became knit together as though the two of them were one. And they had a lot of things in common. They were probably both about the same age. They both had demonstrated a lot of courage and bravery and prowess in their ability to conquer the enemies of Israel. Just a short time before, Jonathan and his armor bearer had routed the whole Philistine army. And now we have David doing a very similar thing, single-handed, with his battle with Goliath. And, of course, we know that God was with these men on both occasions. This was actually the work and the doings of God. And it gives us a lot of encouragement today, a lot of strength, just to know that God does work this way, that God can take the most humble and the most menial situations and turn them into great victories for His cause, if we will but work with Him, we would have the faith and the courage to go with God. And so David and Jonathan had many things in common. They both had been at the very top of the popularity in the eyes of the people. On one occasion, Jonathan was saved from his own father after he had violated the father's curse, and the people wouldn't let one hair of Jonathan's head fall when he was due to be put to death for violating this curse. And the reason was that he had wrought with God. And so we see that this is a very natural thing then for these two to have a very great feeling for each other because of their very similar natures. Now, of course, we know that Jonathan was the son of a king and David was the son of a shepherd. And so they didn't have the same backgrounds, but at this time they have a lot in common. And verse 2 says, "And Saul took him that day, and would let him go no more home to his father's house." So Saul had such a feeling for David, such a need for David, that he wouldn't let him return back home. He wanted him to stay in the court, to stay in his service. And as we learned earlier, Saul had the ability and the power to press any person into service in the whole country. And those that were the most brave and the most able and the most courageous, those are the ones that he looked for and brought into his service. And he did this very same thing with David. "Then Jonathan and David made a covenant because he loved him as his own soul." So not only are Jonathan and David close friends, not only do they have a very deep affection and feeling for one another, not only do they have a lot in common, but they also now have sealed this with a covenant because he loved him as his own soul. Now, we know that the word love means that you'll not work any ill or any harm to your neighbor. So this idea of Jonathan and David having a love for each other doesn't mean that anything illicit or wrong would be done between them. This does not in any remote sense even imply that there was any kind of a homosexual type relationship. To not work any ill would mean that one would do nothing to the other that would be wrong or sinful. One would do nothing that would allow the other to have any wrong done to them. And so this is love in the true sense of the term and does not imply anything that would be wrong or illicit. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him and gave it to David, his garments even to his sword and to his bow and to his girdle. So Jonathan had such a deep feeling for David that he wanted to give David a good wardrobe. He wanted him to have fine clothes just like he had. He no longer wanted him to wear the garb of the shepherd, no longer wanted him to wear the garb of a common man. And so he even gives him his own clothes. He takes his robe and gives to him his garments, and also his sword and his bow and his girdle. Now, a short time before this, Saul had tried to clothe David with armor, and David said that he wouldn't take it because he hadn't proved it, just before he went into the battle with Goliath. But now he does take these garments and these weapons that Jonathan gives him. Now, we notice it doesn't work in reverse. Jonathan doesn't take David's clothes and put them on himself. He doesn't trade with David. He gives David his wardrobe so that David will be well-dressed and because of his deep love for David. And David went out whithersoever Saul sent him and behaved himself wisely. So we see that David was used as a courier or a messenger or maybe a troubleshooter, whatever need Saul would have for him, wherever he sent him, David went, and he behaved himself wisely. So this tells us that he did a good job for Saul, that he made decisions that were to the liking of Saul and to the betterment of the nation. And this then speaks very highly of David. And Saul set him over the men of war. Now, that was another duty that Saul had for David. He set him over the men of war. Now, this doesn't mean that he had command over the whole army. He didn't take the place of Abner. Abner still was the chief commander. But David was set over a certain number of men, we don't know how many, enough so that he then had a hand in the guidance of certain ones that he was set over. And he was accepted in the sight of all the people. Now here's another thing. Here's a man that not only was high in government, not only was he doing a good work for Saul, not only was he very beneficial in the affairs of the nation, but he was accepted in the sight of all the people. He was very popular in all the land. It seems that now the name David was one that was known by everyone. And they all had a good feeling for David. They all had a high regard for him. They all respected him. And so he was accepted in the sight of all the people, which is a very rare position for anyone to be in, to be accepted in the sight of all the people. And also in the sight of Saul's servants. So not only was he accepted by the people, but he was also accepted in the court of the king, in the sight of Saul's servants. And so the ones who should have been the most faithful to Saul, the ones who should have had all of their energies directed toward the service of Saul, they also had a high acceptance of David. So David is accepted in all areas now, in private and in public. And he is a well-known person in the eyes of the nation. It seems that David cut such a high and noble figure that the people of the land couldn't resist having a high regard for him. And this also is another great characteristic of David, that he was able to bear all of this honor and respect that was flowing in upon him. And it came rather suddenly. And he was able to bear this without being lifted up above measure. And so it shows that he had a very good character to be able to climb so fast and then to at the same time have a good head and a good heart so that he didn't think more highly of himself than he should. And it is more difficult to know how to abound than it is to know how to be abased. Now beginning in verse 6 we have a story that tells us of some events that caused Saul to begin to change his feeling about David. Feelings of envy and jealousy and hatred come to the forefront now on the part of Saul. Verse 6 says, "And it came to pass, as they came, when David was returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, that the women came out of all cities of Israel, singing and dancing, to meet King Saul with tabrets, with joy, and with instruments of music." So here they were making a circuit of some of the cities in the kingdom. And this was following the slaughter of the Philistines. It was following the great victory that Israel had had. And the women would come out singing and dancing to meet King Saul. They'd come out kind of like we'd send a band out to meet a celebrity today. And some of these women were actually professional at this. This was more or less their job to be able to provide this kind of entertainment. And they were giving a great greeting to the king as he would come to their city. And the women answered one another as they played and said, "Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s." So here is the thing that really did upset Saul. They had a song they were singing. This song was probably written by a local poet, maybe someone who was in the business of writing songs for the women to sing. And in this song, they made the statement that Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. And we find that back in Deuteronomy 33, verse 17, when Moses is making a comparison between Ephraim and Manasseh, that he says they are the 10,000s of Ephraim and they are the thousands of Manasseh, giving praise to both tribes, but giving more praise to the one about whom he mentions the 10,000s over the one that he just says had the thousands. And so here in this song, they're doing the same thing. They're giving praise to Saul and to David, but somehow they're giving more praise to David than to Saul because they attribute David to having slain 10,000s and Saul to having slain thousands. Now, probably the person who wrote this didn't really mean to give any bad reflection upon Saul. This could have been referring to the previous battle in which David was the principal one in that battle. David had, by his slaying of Goliath, made the victory over the Philistines possible. We read of Saul doing really very little in that battle. And so it probably was just a popular tune of the day, popular song of the day, and it didn't really mean any harm to Saul. But Saul took it in a different way. Verse 8 says, "And Saul was very wroth, and the saying displeased him. And he said, They have ascribed unto David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed but thousands. And what can he have more but the kingdom?" So here Saul sees that there is a possibility of David being more popular than he is. And so he reviews this thing in his mind. Well, they're saying that David has slain 10,000s, and they've only said that I have slain but thousands. And so what more can they do for David but give him the kingdom? My throne is in danger. My position as king is being threatened here. This man is gaining more popularity among the people than I am. And so we see that this would cause Saul to have all the bad feelings come to the forefront, the feelings of envy and of jealousy, of the anger. He was wroth at this. And the actual result of this is that Saul began to have murderous intentions toward David. So verse 9 says, "And Saul eyed David from that day forward." That is, he kept his eye on David. He had the eye of hatred and the eye of envy and the eye of jealousy. All the bad feelings that one person can have for another, Saul developed these for David. And it seems that this feeling is all one-sided. Saul is the only one who has the bad feeling. David doesn't seem to have any of these feelings towards Saul. David seems to be going on about his business, harmless, innocent, and without any feelings of wrath or envy or jealousy toward Saul. Verse 10, "And it came to pass on the morrow that the evil spirit from God came upon Saul, and he prophesied in the midst of the house." Now here again we have this evil spirit from God coming upon Saul. It's a little bit of a mystery to know exactly what this is. But we do know that because of Saul's bad attitude, because of his feeling of hatred and envy and jealousy, because of his anger, that God didn't have his spirit upon Saul. And when God removes his spirit, then this allows the devil to move in with a bad spirit, with an evil spirit. And whether God actually had Saul to be possessed by an evil spirit, or whether this was just God allowing Satan to move in and to give him an evil spirit, it's a little hard to say for sure. And also, how much of this might have been actual mental illness, mental distress on the part of Saul, it's hard to say for sure. And there probably was a mixture of this. The evil spirit was present, and then Saul was also mentally distressed in addition to that. But this spirit moved in to Saul as a result of his great envy and hatred of David. And so this evil spirit from God came upon Saul. And so we can see how he's, again, thrown into his fits of depression, his fits of abnormal behavior, those things that he had earlier in which David had to come and play for him to soothe him and to give him some relief. And so that's what is happening here. And while he's in this state of having this evil spirit, he prophesied in the midst of the house. Now the Bible scholars seem to agree that this word here for prophesied not only means that he could prophesy or pray or worship, but it also means that he could pretend to do this. He didn't have to actually be doing it, but he could just be pretending or going through the motions of doing it. And as he then pretended to prophesy, pretended to worship God, or even pretended to pray to God, this would throw David off. This would make David be unsuspicious of him doing anything bad. This would make David not be in a defensive mode, and consequently it would give Saul an advantage over David if he tried to do David some harm. But while this was happening, David played with his hand as at other times. So David was playing the music now to soothe Saul while he was in this fit of depression, while he was in this state of having the evil spirit upon him. He played to soothe him. And there was a javelin in Saul's hand. Now, any time a person is in the state of mind that Saul was in, any time he's being led by a fit of frenzy, by a fit of irrational thought and motives, then it's a dangerous thing for him to have a weapon in his hand. And Saul had a javelin. Now, a javelin was an instrument that could be projected or thrown. It was one that could have a potential for being very devastating. He didn't even have to be that close to David to be able to use it against David. Verse 11, "And Saul cast the javelin, for he said, I will smite David even to the wall with it." So he had an evil, murderous intent here. He threw the javelin at David. He wanted to pin David to the wall with the javelin. He was so angry. He was in such a fit of frenzy. He was so overcome by his hatred of David that he tried to put him to death with the javelin. And David avoided out of his presence twice. So David was able to dodge the javelin and to get away from Saul. And it says he did this twice, and it's probably referring to a second time that this occurred, which we'll read about in chapter 19, verse 10, in which Saul again tried to kill him with the javelin. And so we see then that things have really gotten to a bad point. Saul is so envious and so full of hatred that now he's willing to take physical action against David and to endanger the life of David, even try to put David to death. So here we see that open war is really being declared by Saul against David. And verse 12 says, "And Saul was afraid of David, because the Lord was with him and was departed from Saul." Now Saul had reason at this point to be afraid of David. Not that David had done anything, not that David was going to do anything. But first of all, he had made an open attack upon David. And so if David had decided to retaliate against Saul, then he would have been somewhat justified, because he could simply be saying that he was only defending himself against someone who was trying to do him bodily harm. But he also was afraid of David because he may have felt that now David was going to try to usurp the throne. David had more popularity than Saul had. And so, in the eyes of the people, he was more fitted to be the king. And, of course, we would also think that Saul realized that there was something wrong with him mentally. He didn't have the mental ability, the mental keenness that he once had and that he should have. And so this would make him inferior to David and give David an advantage over him. But the Bible says he was afraid of David because the Lord was with him and was departed from Saul. Saul realized that he was in a state that was not accepted by God. He was in a state that was disapproved of by God. And so any time a person is in that condition and he's pitted against someone who is approved of by God, he has made himself an enemy or a foe are an antagonist of one who does have the approval of God, then there's good reason to be afraid, because the one who has the Lord with him has all the advantage. He is going to ultimately gain the victory. Now, it may be a victory that we don't anticipate. It may be a victory that we wouldn't really call a victory on the surface. But he's going to be brought into such a state that he'll have the will of God to happen for him. In the case of David, the victory was going to be gaining the throne. God had already anointed David to be king. It was a matter of simply God's prophecy now being fulfilled that David should become king. And Saul could begin to sense this. He was losing, and David was gaining. Although David was not aggressive, David had done nothing to indicate that he had any designs upon the throne. David seemed to still be a humble, obedient servant to Saul. It was just a matter of the popularity of the people, and so Saul was interpreting it this way. And Saul might have been blowing some things even out of proportion. This little song that they were singing, in which they attributed 10,000 to David and only 1,000 to Saul, probably wasn't really meant to degrade Saul. Saul interpreted it that way. And so Saul then is in the position of openly opposing David with violence and with force. And Saul had actually tipped his hand now as to what his feelings were when he had thrown the javelin at David, tried to kill him. But we see this wasn't something that David was desiring at all. David withdrew from the presence of Saul. He didn't fight back. He didn't retaliate. And so this was plain evidence that he was far from trying to overthrow Saul as being king, that he had any designs upon replacing Saul, that he had any idea of wanting to do any harm to Saul. This does put David in a very tenuous position, but David continues to behave himself very wisely. And the more wisely David behaves, the more Saul becomes afraid of him. So nothing David can do would at this time change Saul's mind. Everything was building up in Saul's mind that David was against him. And so we see now the stage set for a great conflict. We're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.